So conversation with your parents. My folks made it clear very early on that they wanted not to be a burden to us at any point in time as they aged. We heard that all of our adult lives. And the second thing they made clear to us is they never, ever wanted to be in a nursing home. So they went about taking very good care of themselves. They did the vitamins and the exercise and the whole thing. And then they also were really meticulous about planning for their future. But as life would have it, Mom was in a serious car accident in 2007. And it left her with a traumatic brain injury and multiple broken bones and just a long history of hospital visits and rehab and physical therapy and all kinds of operations and things. So my dad became her primary caregiver and advocate, and he worked very hard at that and made that his life purpose. And my brothers and I came alongside him as best we could, but he was very independent. You know, that generation is very much on their own, didn't really want any help. But we knew that at some point in time we might have to step in, and so we made that known. And as we could see that my dad was starting to really bear the brunt of those years of taking care of my mom, we started to feel that maybe was the time to offer up a place for Mom to go in the event that Dad's health failed. So Eric and I approached them both and said, look, if the time comes, we would be more than happy for Mom to stay with us. So they thought about it and came back to us and said, we would, if you really were serious about that, we would like to take you up on that when the time comes. And I remember the two of us feeling a little bit kind of proud of ourselves, like, look at us, we're so good that we're going to offer this, and we're going to say, yes, we would love to have Mom stay with us. So December 2015 rolled around, and it was Christmas time, and we were all gathered together as a family. And somehow I knew my dad's health had come to a point that we really wouldn't have him with us much longer. And I don't know if it's just because we had the distance that I really felt the inclination to have a conversation with him. So I approached him. I said, Dad, could we go for a walk? And so we did. And sweetness of that walk is just kind of embedded in me. And I asked him all of those questions. You know, Dad, how's your relationship with the Lord? Tell me about your favorite hymn. What's your favorite verse? Tell me what I need to know about caring for Mom. And he just talked. It seemed like I opened up the floodgate, because as soon as I started asking him questions, he just talked to me as if this would be our last conversation. And sure enough, it was. About 6 weeks later, he passed away. And so when I went back to California to plan for his memorial service, my brothers and I started making arrangements for my mom. And this is the part about the conversations with the siblings. And my brother looked at me. This was days within my dad's passing. My brother looked at me and he said, so is Mom going home with you on the plane? And I was not in that place. I couldn't believe that was what we were going to do. And so I called Eric, like the smart wife that I am, because he just amazingly said, well, of course, you can't leave Mom there alone. You bring her home and we'll figure it out. So that's what we did. And I spent an extra week there in California just packing up her things and just bringing whatever I thought she would need for this next phase of her life. And the wonderful thing was I also got to have an appointment with the physical therapist while I was there that week. And he was fantastic. He actually told me some just really simple things, like make sure you have chairs all over the house so she has a place to rest, and make sure you pick up all the throw rugs so that she doesn't trip. And I mean, he just told me some really practical things. And then even after we moved back home here, I was able to email him and show him the modifications we were making for her bathroom. And he was showing me where to put the bars and how to, you know, place them so they would be most effective for her. I think, you know, in any sibling relationship, there can be all kinds of tension, but especially when you lose a loved one. And there's a couple of things that really made the difference for us that I think was unique, but one was that my dad had left a letter for us as siblings, and in it he wrote, Though each and every one of us is unique in our roles in life, my wish for all of you in dealing with the disposition of things we leave behind is that they be dealt with in the spirit of love and family unity. And I think we committed to that. Each of us knew that that was his heart, and so the three of us really worked toward that end. And one of the practical things that we did is we set up a weekly conference call that we put on our calendars. We were all in different parts of the country. We were all working, but we made sure that we talked to each other once a week. And those conversations were not always pretty. They were not always easy, but we made sure we did them. And we each had separate roles. They were dealing with my folks' belongings and the finances and kind of walking through all of that. And we, Eric and I, were dealing with Mom. So we knew we each had our own individual roles, but we also needed each other a great deal. We needed to have that open communication. So I would encourage that as you all are perhaps walking down this road. One thing we did that was just a practical piece of that time with my brothers was they set up an online application. It's called Trello. It's an online bulletin board, and we were able to put up all of Mom and Dad's belongings in pictures and electronically have a conversation with each other about what to do with all their things. And I know if you've been through this, that's one of the hardest parts is the stuff. And that was a way that we could do it really effectively and efficiently. So the next conversation that Eric and I talked about was just the conversations between us. And I learned the hard way in bringing my mom home. I really kind of thought that it would just impact me and my time. I would be able to keep it all just me and Mom. But it didn't occur to me this adorable, sweet, funny woman was not just my mom. She was my husband's mother-in-law, and she was my kid's grandmother. And everything that I was trying to do to help her, I thought it would just impact me, but it really impacted them. So I was wrong in thinking that I could kind of protect them from all of that. And suddenly at every meal, we had somebody with us in every conversation. And it changed really everything. And so in the evenings after dinner, rather than being with my husband or my kids, I was putting Mom to bed, or I was fretting about her falling, or I was worried about which caregiver we had, which day, and what activity she would have the next day. So it really became all-consuming. So finally, after about a year, Eric kind of stepped in, and we just had some really hard conversations about what's the best for Mom's health, what's the best for our marriage, what's the best for our children, what's the best for my health. And he really kind of helped push us to a place of really making a decision that she needed to move into assisted living. Do you want to talk about that at all?
Yeah, I'll mention something about that.
This is my one shot to talk. Here's what I would want you to hear about that. Because I'm the spouse of Karen, who's caring for her parent. Plus she's a female, and she had made a commitment to her dad to take care of her mom, and she wanted to fulfill that commitment. So I felt like my role was to be the voice of reason and take some of the burden off of her and make a tough call. Because at the end of the year, I said, let's see how it goes for a year, and then we'll reevaluate. And at that point, I just said, this is killing you, and it's destroying our family. And I said, and she came back with, but I told my dad, we wouldn't go there. And I said, your dad would never have expected you to go where we're going. He didn't realize at the time, because at the time she wasn't as bad off as she is now. And so I said, I just kind of took I'm the bad cop position, because I knew emotionally it was much harder for her to do that with her mom than it was for me, and it was already hard for me. So I made that call. It was a tough transition, because we saw her emotionally be disappointed with that decision and deal with it, and she kind of declined in health. But that was one. That's why I felt like I had to step in and do that for the health of our family and marriage. So.
What I meant to tell you at the beginning of this whole thing was when we entered into this, we really didn't know what we didn't know. We didn't know the full picture of Mom's cognitive limitations and kind of the trajectory of where she was headed. We didn't know the full picture of our own limitations. We had no idea what we had so proudly said yes to. We had no idea. So I would encourage you, just as you all are walking this journey, and so many of you are probably way down the road from us and have already been there, done that, and get it much more than I do. But get to know your parent. Make sure you get the diagnoses, you see the doctors, you find out all the information you can find out before you make any decisions about any kind of care. I just encourage you to do that. Talk to people around you. Talk to people at your table. There are some really experts at these tables, so talk to them, use them. We've got some great books. There's an online website at perimeter.org. There's a page there that has some great resources. And pray. I can't even emphasize that enough. I cherish the time that we've had with my mom. Putting her to bed at night has just been such a sweet thing for me. Reading to her, laughing with her. My mother is hysterical. She loves Eric to pieces. She has a crush on him like you wouldn't believe. It's the cutest thing.
I have that effect on women.
Today she's in full memory care. Again, it's not where we thought we would be at all. It's not the story we expected. But isn't God like that, really? He's gone before us. He's been behind us. He's been really next to us and with us every step of the way.
Okay, so I'm going to read some of this, and we'll expound on some of it along the way as well. For us, this story is about my parents' journey into dementia. And my story is one of many persons who find themselves as caregivers of their loved ones. In this case, it is my parents, not Rebecca's. Even though Rebecca's parents and mine are the same age, her folks still live alone. They're living independently, and it's just not the case with my parents. So, you know, there is no, there's no really why that happened there versus happened there. I mean, it's just God's sovereignty, and we are okay with that. While many stories center around physical deficiencies with aging parents, our story is about mental deficiencies and our aging parents. The story started back in 2011, when my mother, 72 years old at that time, began showing signs of dementia. Things like forgetting who people are, hiding things around the house, leaving items in the refrigerator to spoil, food burning on the stove. You know, we didn't dare call it by name. We didn't say the word Alzheimer's, as there was a history of that in our family. Her sisters battled with Alzheimer's, had Alzheimer's. She had two brothers that also had that. And she vowed she would not really get that disease, as she called it. But that was really not her choosing. Another red flag was issues with medicines. Medicines in bottles, medicines that grew in number. Medicines that required, you know, one dose in the morning, one in the evening, two, you know, every other day, had no mental capacity to keep up with all of that. I think what even continued to take that red flag further for us was we got a pill dispenser with an AM and a PM and dispersed those for them and put them out, and they were having trouble remembering what was the AM and what was the PM. I have one sibling. A brother who's 3 years older than me. He and I kept waiting on our parents to talk with us about the legal side of getting their house in order. The power of attorney, the will, the living will, all of those documents. But they never approached us about the issue. And we waited year after year for that. My mom was getting worse, and my dad was dealing with the fallout of my mom's anger, hostility, belligerence, and even violence. He called my brother one night, they lived in Alabama, called him from, his bedroom where he had locked himself up, telling my brother that your mom is outside the door and she wants to get in and kill me. This is very hard to hear, when your parents have been married more than 50 years. So in 2013, late 2013, after Christmas Day, my brother and I went over to my parents' house and told them that we needed to get their legal documents in place, get their legal house in order so we could take care of them. And, you know, they reacted with thankfulness. Thankfulness and humility, telling us they were so glad we approached them. And they really didn't know what to do. So throughout 2014, my mother kept having issues at home, and my dad was trying his best to manage things. But his mental health was starting to decline and become weary over dealing with my mother as the caregiver. While mother kept a spotless home, that wasn't the case anymore. The pantry was empty. The refrigerator, things in it that weren't food, and then food things that were in there that was molded. Again, huge signs that, you know, things aren't all right. You see, my parents grew up in a time where the man took care of the outside of the house, and the woman took care of the inside of the house. And that's just, those boundaries were kind of defined that way. And so when my mother could no longer take care of the inside of the house, my dad just wasn't really able to function in their home there anymore. My mom started sleeping more in the daytime, and my dad was really getting lonely. So we made the big decision to move them from their home to an assisted living center, facility. So a little different than Eric and Karen's story. We didn't move them into our home. And, you know, we were the two sons, so that's a different dynamic, right, than the daughter. But that was what we chose to do. We found a home after looking around and visiting quite a few. One in Birmingham, where they lived, in Birmingham, Alabama. This was a bit traumatic at first, but it allowed them to reset and have meals prepared, their facility clean, and it minimized their needs to take care of things. My mom is now on medication and has a geriatric doctor seeing her at that time. I was living here, and this was all taking place in Birmingham, where they were. So we made trips over there about once a month. We ended up selling their home, and we had an estate sale on their things inside the home because everything can't go to a smaller space. It just can't. Kept, obviously, many of the treasured items, but the big things had to be sold. Very stressful time going through that, trying to do that from afar. But God was good, and we found a buyer quickly on the home, purchased and renovated it and resold it. So that worked out well. My parents were not really an emotional. My dad wasn't in a place at that point to call the shots, and so my brother was doing most of that from afar. Things were okay in the assisted living center, but my mom's mental health got worse. She started hiding jewelry, toothbrushes, clothes in and around. She was hiding money in places. We couldn't find things. She was really driving my father crazy, getting up at all hours of the night. Again, this is symptoms of the disease, you know. It's very hard to separate that in your heart and your mind, that this is the disease, it's not the person. Dad continued to live independent, but my mother was moved into memory care later that year. So he was really just brokenhearted because he didn't see her as much because he had to really navigate a larger facility to get to where she was. And my mother at that point wasn't really talking in proper sentences. There wasn't a dialogue there. It was just words that went together. The transition seemed to work for a while, but then my father's mental health started to deteriorate some. He wasn't comfortable finding his way around a very large facility, stayed inside mostly, kind of becoming reclusive, which was not a good thing. He needed a smaller space, more interaction with other people. There weren't really any alternatives there in Birmingham, believe it or not, so we tried to visit often and make the best of it.
I told Chris I'd speak into this part. So as we saw his dad declining, that was hard, very, very difficult for us. And we, of course, live in South Forsyth. We drive up and down 141 all the time, and we see multiple facilities being built. And so Chris and I just kind of started to think, you know, maybe God was wanting us to move them here to Atlanta to take care of them. We were hoping that that would also kind of relieve some stress and burden that had been on his brother for about 3 years. There was stress between he and his brother's relationship. And so we felt like maybe here would be a better place for them, and we could take on caring for them. So we kind of started looking at different facilities. There was one that was being built right across the street from us and that had multiple levels of care. And so that's what Chris's parents needed. We were able to see that. And so we began to pray about the possibility of doing that. And we needed that wisdom and discernment there to make sure this was the right decision for all of us involved. And for me, it was a big commitment, too. It wasn't just a Chris and Mike decision. It was also me, because I was going to be highly involved in their care. Chris travels often. He's gone quite a bit. And so I knew when he was gone, then I was the one that was going to be on call. And so it was a in it together time that we had to commit to if we were going to bring them over. So it was important for me to be just as fully on board as Chris was when we were praying about it and thinking about it. So I'll let him tell you the rest of the story.
So that change, moving my parents here, making that decision to take on that responsibility, made a huge difference for my brother and I, because no longer was he taking care of the financial component and trying to provide the emotional piece, which really wasn't his gift. It's not his spiritual gift. I'm more the caregiver as my spiritual gift, and he was happy to take care of the administrative piece of that. And by splitting that up has just really helped liberate our relationship and made us much closer in fellowship to each other. We still have to communicate with all their doctors, the assistive living facility. We're kind of their liaisons. We fill out all the paperwork, set up all the doctor visits, and advocate for all their medicines as they're dispensed. You have to keep up with, you know, what they're taking when, and even though someone's responsible for that, so to speak, you still have to know what's going on, and you got to be engaged. In fact, we just recently moved my father to the next level of care, from an assisted living facility, part of the facility, to a more higher level of care. You know, we've cried, we've prayed, we've been mad. I've gotten mad because the selfish piece, right? I got to go over and do that. I tell my guys in my men's group, I have a couple of my friends here tonight, you know, they say, "Where have you been?" And I'm like, "Taking care of my parents," you know. And they know that. They get that. But it does take you away from maybe your life changes and during this period of time. It's not a road we wish on anyone, but we've learned a lot along the way. Patience, grace, love, humility. And I really think God's trying to teach us all those virtues, so I'm grateful for that.
Well, thank you all for sharing. I know it's a rough road, a hard journey, a season of life that you all are in, and many of you in this room are in or moving towards. And so we've carved out some time. We'll end at 6:30, but just for y'all to talk at your tables and maybe talk about where you are in your journey, and there are some table discussion questions that you can go through. You can use those or not, but you might be able to learn from each other. Some of you are not there yet. Some of you are, and there might be some learnings there. And then we'll circle back around, and if you have questions that you want to ask Eric and Karen, Chris and Rebecca, then we can do that, and then we'll close at the end. They'll have some closing thoughts as well. So does that sound good? Okay. All right, it sounds like conversation was good and helpful at your tables. We'll call Chris and Rebecca, and Eric and Karen are up to share some thoughts that may have come up at the table or some closing thoughts that they've had. But I also want to give you an opportunity to ask any questions, maybe some things that they talked about, some thoughts that you have, some questions maybe were not addressed in their stories of what they were able to relate briefly. But if you have questions, let us know. Now's the time to talk. Or if there's anything that you'd like to share from your table conversation or anything you'd like to add to the conversation, okay? So anybody have any thoughts, any questions?
I know the biggest thing and the reason I'm here is about communicating about these things. You all mentioned, and I know Chris did, Chris and I know each other. We're in D group together, all that, so I knew the story before. But the having the conversation with your parents, it ranges all over the board. I can, you know, the we were talking here about some hold it in, won't release it at all. And Chris's story is that was the case, but when he approached them, him and his brother approached them, it was like almost like, why didn't you? Or I don't know what you all went through exactly. Sounds like your communication, Karen, was great with the siblings also. I searched for how to make it happen, how to have that conversation with them, how to even with if they resist, how to continue, and with siblings and all, how to have some kind of commonality in those in conversations about amongst the siblings, and then carrying on with siblings to the parents. Have you had more difficulty there? Have you seen, you know, have ideas and suggestions on how to do that?
Does this work? I think one, Sandy's a huge resource. I hate to point you out, Sandy, but we were in a meeting with you, and she's a fantastic resource because she talks about how do you start those conversations and how do you say to your parents, do you have an advance directive? Do you know what you want when the time, you know, being willing to enter into what could be a very scary conversation. And yes, we were very fortunate. My dad had enough friends who had gone about it in a way that didn't go well that he really purposed to make it easier on us. So that wasn't my. But anyway, Sandy, how can they find you?
Oh, I have a card I can give anybody who'd like to. But with my folks, when we were going to ask them to come move down near to us, they were living in Pennsylvania. We lived in Atlanta. So in order for me to follow up on doctor visits and to go with them to visits, I said, you'll need to live in the same town to make that happen. So they agreed to come move. But before they moved, I went up to Pennsylvania, and all the siblings were gathered with them together. And I asked them about what their end-of-life expectations were. Specifically, my dad had failing health. So I asked him, do you want to be on a kidney machine? Do you want to be on a breathing machine? Do you want us? And then he basically said, I do not want to go to a hospital. So I want to die in my bed. And I said, well, that takes a lot of work anymore to die. Because the default, if you go to a hospital, is they'll do everything. So we were able to have them come move next to us. But the conversation started before they ever moved. And then my siblings, I talked with them after we moved as to what the expectations were for me living next door, being a nurse. What were they thinking I was going to do in the event Dad needed more help? So we had to have some of those kind of hard conversations from the very beginning. But Dad made it clear, put things in writing, and so when the time came, we called the ambulance to come bring my dad in from the yard where he'd fallen down and had bled. And they brought him in the house and wanted to take him to the hospital. And we said, no, he doesn't want to go to the hospital. We're going to care for him here. And I self-referred to hospice. They sent people on the weekend. I got everything going. He never went to the hospital. And he died at home 5 days later. But what I found through all of this decision time was at a Perimeter Women's Retreat, they sent us out on the Saturday afternoon to ask the Lord to show us, what is it that you're holding on to that God is asking you to give to him? And I had to release how my daddy will die. Because as a nurse, I had in my mind, with all of the things wrong with them, I was trying to anticipate, we're going to need a full-time caregiver, we're going to need this, we're going to need that. And I was planning plan B, C, D, and E. And the way God took him home in 4 days, he went down on a Friday and he died on a Tuesday. So there was no need for full-time live-in housekeeping caregiver. There was no need for any of the equipment I thought we'd need. He died very quickly. I had no idea that would happen because he didn't have a terminal diagnosis that I thought. The hospice people came and said, Sandy, why didn't you call us sooner? I said, he was a Cracker Barrel on Wednesday night. You know, the man was healthy. As of Wednesday, he was at Cracker Barrel. But
it was
at Cracker Barrel that did it. Yeah, I know. That's it. Yeah. But I'd be glad to help anyone who'd like to have more information like that. Yeah.
Sure. I know one thing that I've learned from Chris and Mike and them talking to their parents and especially their dad in the last few years is often they would have to go to him and say, Dad, please, we want you to trust us. We love you and we want what's best for you. And so they've had to say that over and over to his dad. And I think when they've said that, I feel like just a melting, you know, and just knowing those words and hearing those words from your children, you know, please trust us. You know, we care about you. We love you and we want what's best for you. And that's, you know, what we're here to do. You know, it's our time to take care of you.
Any other questions, comments? Sharing learnings from your own experiences? Yeah.
Hi, I'm going to ask a very practical question. Once you're in the assisted living or home care, I know the cost is very exorbitant. So how do you handle that? And what happens when the resources for the parents run out?
I think you're asking an unanswerable question. So it is very challenging. And, you know, in privatized healthcare, it's just what it's called. It's privatized, meaning that these assisted living centers are all private care facilities. And so they take three forms of payment. They take cash. They take VA-related benefits. And they take long-term care policies. They take nothing else, right? So those are the three vehicles to pay for things. If your parents don't have the wealth that you can administrate on their behalf, or you don't have the wealth to do that, then you're looking at bringing them into your own home to try to minimize or mitigate the cost. And that's going to change a lot of things. And for some people, that's an okay alternative. It works and will work. And it is the least costly way to manage things. But you're going to need some consultative help. Things like rearranging furniture in your house, because it's got to be a safe environment if they're perhaps not stable to move around. It may require modifications in your house to modify the space for them to be there. And it's going to require someone to provide lots of supplemental care and caregiving, which may mean that someone may have to stop working if they're working outside the home. So there's not easy answers there. I'm very thankful. The silver lining is that we did have my parents' wealth to use to help them with this, and it is very expensive. Very expensive. Shockingly expensive. And understand what that looks like before you get there. Because once you get there, you don't want to have to decide that quickly or decide that in haste.
So, I mean, just to give you an idea in round numbers, it's $20 an hour roughly to have an in-home caregiver. So if you get to the point where it becomes full-time, right, because they always need somebody in their presence, that's $20,000 a month, right? Being in a facility of some kind is about six, give or take $1,000, just depending on what level of care they need. So that's still a lot of money. And one of the conversations we were having at our table was that's not an option for everybody, and siblings aren't necessarily – so. And one person can't do it. You just can't. It's impossible. You'll kill yourself doing that. So, you know, now you have to have conversations with your siblings, and one of the comments that was made was, you know, there's broken relationships and people living in the past. And that's where you have to kind of you have to have as much as you can a heart to heart and say, look, let's move forward and deal with what we've got today. Let's leave the past where it is. Can't do anything about that. And let's just realize that we have to come together and work together on providing some care, whatever that looks like. But there are no easy answers. And some of it, too, is you've got it's probably an opportunity that you guys will have to get to the heart of the issue with potentially your siblings, you know, and talk about, you know, their hurts and their hopes and dreams and desires. Because, you know, let's face it, when you think about your future and after raising kids and now and you were thinking, okay, empty nested, right? And being a full-time caregiver isn't necessarily in your plans. So those are hard conversations that you've got to have. And it's particularly challenging if you've got tough relationships, but that's something that you're going to probably have to work through.
Thank you all. That's very, very helpful, practical information. I want to save the last few minutes so that y'all can give final thoughts. Maybe you already have, but while I'm thinking about it, because we're doing a podcast, all of these sessions and all the other venues as well will be available online, so you can go back and listen. But I've asked Sandy Dunbar if she would just give her contact information on the in the microphone so it can be available on the podcast. And then that way y'all can get it, too, very easily.
Okay. Hi, this is Sandy Dunbar. My contact phone number for cell phone is 404-316-3724. Thank you.
And Sandy, remind us again what your, if somebody were to contact you, what would that primarily be in regards as relates to this topic?
End of life planning. End of life conversations with families for Christians.
Okay, gotcha. Okay, great. All right, I'll let y'all close this.
So a couple of books that I want to make sure you all are aware of. These were ones that were handed over by the church bookstore, and we'll have them up here if you take a look at them. 30 Days of Hope. When Caring for Aging Parents, so kind of a bit of an inspirational, devotional book focused towards aging parents. This one called The Caregiving Season, Finding Grace to Honor Your Aging Parents, from Jane Daly. It's a focus on the family book. And then one that's a little more scientific slash pragmatic was one that we have used and resourced a lot. It's called Alzheimer's Disease, 300 Tips for Making Life Easier. It's this book. And what's so great about this book is that it takes you through different phases and stages. Because, understand, with dementia and these diseases, they're degenerative and they're progressive. So they start off slow, as some of the things and examples we talked about, and they grow. And the hard part to accept is they don't get better, right? I mean, that's the sad ending, if you will, is that they don't get better. They get better when they go to glory. And we're looking forward to that day when it comes. But what's great about this is it gives you tips and advice on how to address different parts and stages along the way. Different ways to address things that both socially, you know, caregiving-wise, physically, so forth and so on. So that's been a very good book for us to use. Last thing is just don't wait around for your parents to say something to you. I almost waited too late for that. And that is at least my biggest takeaway advice. Do not wait. Don't wait too late, because when you wait too late, you'll find yourselves making decisions quickly. And you need the wisdom and time to process and think through what's best to do.
along the line of what Chris said, and it was something I was going to share in my story, and I just didn't. But Mother's Day 2007, I had this wild hair to go visit Mom for Mother's Day to just surprise her. And it was, we talked about praying and asking God to give you the wisdom to know what to do when. And I just went. My husband was supportive. I just went, visited with her that weekend. Her car accident was 5 days later. So I honestly believe that God ordained, you know, before time and space that I would have that weekend with her. So listen to the Holy Spirit when he's speaking to you. I mean, I ask things like, should I go have lunch with Mom today? Should I go there? You know, these are the decisions that we are in the middle of, and we can't make them without Jesus. So I would just leave that with you. And Eric has one more thing.
And I would say, so my favorite verse right now is Ephesians 2:10, which paraphrased, we are his workmanship, created for good works, that which he prepared beforehand, before we were born, before the beginning of time, so that we would walk in them. And this is one of those good works. And that's what I have to remind myself of, because this wasn't the plan any of us create for ourselves when we think about what our bucket list is, right? But this is God's plan for us, and he knew it a long time ago. And so we need to walk in that in joy, knowing that we have the opportunity to make an impact on our parents, on our family, and including our, you know, our siblings. And maybe it's an opportunity for all of you that have the power of the Holy Spirit. This is an opportunity for you to invoke the power of the Holy Spirit in those relationships that maybe it makes a difference in their lives.
I just wanted to say one more thing, because I think this is important too, is that no situation is alike. We're pretty dramatic up here. We've got two people with one Alzheimer's and one dementia, severe dementia. But yet my parents are still living alone in their 80s and, you know, by themselves. So I don't want everybody to leave here with a downer too, because, you know, it could be different for your families and your parents. And I just, so every situation is a different. And I know Karen and I walked this together because we work together, and her situation is different than ours, but yet we can have the support of each other. And I think that was one thing about tonight that we really wanted to, is for y'all to be able to gather together, see others that are maybe going through some of the same situations or right on the cusp of that, so you can continue that conversation, because I think that's what's so important, is to have that support and just, you know, start that conversation with other people to see what they've done. I know that the Tejedas and us are open to receive any phone calls or conversations with any of y'all or anybody else that you know that's going through some of these things too. We're not an expert like Sandy, but yet we just have walked through some difficult things and have learned a lot from it. So,
well, I really want to thank y'all, Karen and Eric and Rebecca and Chris, for coming and telling us, sharing your stories and giving us insights and wisdom from your learning. So thank you for being here. And thank you all for coming. We hope that it was a beneficial evening. This was hosted and sponsored really by our Connect Groups ministry. And so you can see on the screen, if you have any questions about connecting with a Connect Group, Taste of Perimeter Care and Counseling Ministries, really anything, you can text the word NEXT to that number, and they'll respond and follow up with you. So let me, I think that's it. Let me close this in prayer, and we'll be dismissed. Father, this has been a good evening. This is a hard topic. It's a hard topic. There's difficulty in approaching end of life with parents, and when we've been so used to them being the parents and us being the kids, and then there's a reversal of roles, and it's hard to really make that transition sometimes, to know how to make that transition, to make wise decisions for our parents, to make loving decisions. And so thank you for the wisdom that you've given us tonight from the Littles and the Tejedas. Lord, we're thankful that you walk with us through the valleys, the hard times of life, that you've promised that you would be with us, that you wouldn't ever leave us, that you'd never forsake us, that when we are feeling at our wits' end, when we're despairing, when we're experiencing distress, that you've promised that you would be with us in those moments. And so for those in this room who are in that place, who are really experiencing hard times, discouragement, frustration, questions, Lord, would you come and be our comforter? Would you pour out your grace and your love? Would you use this as an opportunity for us to connect maybe for the first time or in a deeper way with you, and also to connect with others in the room who may be in similar situations? So we thank you for this evening. We pray all these things in Jesus' name. Amen.